Well, every 3 years we come around to this Sunday in Lent, and every 3 years I ask myself, why does the lectionary break up this parable? Because it looks like three stories, and it is three stories, but it's actually one. Pretty much no matter what translation you use, it begins with, then Jesus told them this parable, Jesus told them this story, and then tells the three stories. Which is why we're doing all three, because the lectionary is not the boss of me. Close, but not really. Because there are some things here that are worth looking at when we look at all three of them. Because Jesus told them together, I think, for a very specific purpose. And let's remember the context of why he started telling these at all. He's hanging around with people that the Pharisees dislike and are taking Jesus to task for this with a certain amount of reasonableness. I mean, Jesus is not hanging around with people who are slightly less desirable than the most desirable people in the culture, in the society. He's hanging around with people who are generally considered to be the worst. So it's going to cause comment. People are at least going to notice something is going on. So it's not too surprising that somebody says, "What's wrong with this guy?" And it's out of that context that Jesus tells these three stories. And these three stories are so familiar to us that it's easy for us to lose sight of how sharp the point is in each of them, making the same point from three different perspectives. So we have these three stories. We have a lost sheep, a lost coin, and a lost son. The fact is that this ever became the prodigal son is so strange to me, the more time I spend with it, because it's just all about loss. It's about things being misplaced or whatever it might be. So we have these three lost things. Why three? Why would there need to be three stories of loss? Well, if you've been around here for a while, I can't imagine this is the first time you've heard me talking about Luke 15. And it's because there are different kinds of losses. And so we begin with the sheep. And I think it's safe to say that the sheep was lost through some kind of sheep-like foolishness. Sheep are foolish. That's just the way they are. Someone mentioned again this morning after the earlier service, suggesting that God created sheep just to use as this example of how foolish they can be. They do weird things. They're hard to understand. They wander off in ways that most other domesticated animals don't. And here we have a story of somebody who has 100 sheep, which is a lot of sheep to keep track of. To know one's missing tells you something about the shepherd to begin with. I've seen a couple of dozen sheep together, and when they're moving around, it's just, look, sheep. Like this person knew that one was missing and then did something about it. And we have the story of this shepherd going and looking however far or whatever needed to be done to find the sheep, and brought the sheep back and then beat the sheep within an inch of its life because it was lost. Oh, no, wait a second. That's not it. That's not it at all. The shepherd brought the sheep back and then told all of his friends, because I'm pretty sure it was a man. They did have some shepherdesses, but the shepherd, whoever and whatever they might have been, said, look at this. I'd lost this sheep and now I have it again. This is great news. There's no talk in here about how ridiculous sheep are and how I had to go find the sheep again because this sheep is especially foolish. It's just the sheep was lost. I brought it back. Hooray. And then we have a story of a lost coin. Well, if the sheep was lost through foolishness, which is admittedly a projection, but I think a reasonably safe one. Now, the coin obviously was not lost through foolishness because coins don't have volition. No matter how much we anthropomorphize our possessions, no matter how much we think that that footstool yet again jumped out at us in the dark and made us trip over it, it didn't. And this coin did not lose itself, it simply was lost. And we can go to commentaries and see all kinds of possibilities for this coin. It might have been part of this woman's dowry, it might have been part of a necklace that had 10 coins on it, so it had emotional attachment as well as intrinsic value and extrinsic value. It doesn't really matter. The woman had 10 of them and lost one. And didn't go, oh, well, I guess I'm now 10% less wealthy. That's still not bad. I have 90%. No. She looked and looked and looked until she found the coin. And once again, did not berate the coin, which would make even less sense than berating a sheep. Called her friends in, called her neighbors in and said, look, I'd lost this and now it's here. This is wonderful. She didn't even beat herself up for losing the coin, which is the other thing that we're familiar with perhaps doing. And then we have the lost son. And some people might consider this a bit of a stretch to call this a lost son, but I really don't think it is. And in this case, the son was deliberately lost. The son is the one that went away. And in this case, we can say this was a choice. This wasn't foolishness, even if it was a foolish choice. It wasn't the intrinsic nature of foolishness to this son. The son made this decision that he'd had enough of where he was and wanted to go somewhere else. And it's helpful here to have a bit of context to realize that when the son went to the father and said, I want my inheritance now, it meant a bit more then than it does now. And it really is more of a slap in the face. It's saying, I wish you were dead, but you're not, so let's pretend you're dead and give me what I deserve when you do die. And the father did. And then it's one of those subtle little points, but when we look at the story, we see that the son didn't just sort of go for a trip. The son took everything he had and left. This is somebody saying, I'm not here anymore. It's as if I was never here. I am so gone. And as it turned out, the son had some intentions. I don't know if left with this idea of what we would consider wasting money or not, but left and did. And so the son, who had whatever substance he had all used up in bad ways, now finds himself in a really, really disagreeable situation. There's a famine. He has nothing to eat. Convinces somebody to let him feed pigs, which presumably this is a Jewish man, is doubly insulting. He's feeding these pigs pods, which are probably from a carob tree, which is kind of insulting to anybody who's got carob when they thought it was chocolate. So it's just this double, maybe even triple whammy of him there, miserable. He wants something to eat even, and nobody will give him anything. And so, gives it some thought, and he goes, When I think back to my father's house, the servants at least didn't go hungry. So maybe I'll go back. And he rehearses this little speech. I don't know how long it took him to work it out. I mean, we just get the sort of the end product here. And he's going to go back. And in this translation, he says, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. This is a little cheeky, considering you've already told your dad that you wish he was dead. But still, I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired men. And so he gets up and he goes. And the story is familiar to us, that as he goes back, his father sees him from a distance and runs toward him, which to us we go, well, whatever, he ran toward him. Let's not forget that in that culture, distinguished older men didn't run anywhere unless there was a fire. You didn't run. It was undignified. And you certainly didn't run to someone who was subordinate to you in any way, shape, or form, let alone a younger son. This is an extraordinary act by this father, and it gets more extraordinary overall, because he arrives, and the son begins, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. You notice we don't get the rest of that there. Father says to a servant, and you know, get the best robe and all those sorts. I picture this when I picture it, as the son launches into his little spiel, and he says, what happened? And the father goes, yeah, whatever, shush. We have things to do. I don't care what you have to say about where you were. That doesn't matter. Because what matters is, this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. So let's celebrate. You notice that at the end of this, Jesus realizes this story has got enough of a point to it that he doesn't have to put any business in there about at the end how there's rejoicing in heaven when sons are lost and found either. So we have these three stories of loss, all of which I find tremendous encouragement. They're wonderful stories because they relate to me and quite possibly to you, because we can be lost by foolishness without going to the trouble of becoming a sheep. We make decisions that we think are good decisions, but we didn't really think them through very well. We choose something that if we would have thought more carefully, we might have chosen otherwise, and suddenly we're lost. Now we can't get back because we don't know where we are. That's what being lost is. And who knows what it was, and who knows what it was for you or for me, or there's all kinds of possibilities, but imagine for a moment a young person. It tends to be the young who do these things, but it's not limited to them by any means. And you see this thing that you want, whether it's a car or a stereo or whatever it might be, it's a thing. And you look at it and somebody says, you give me a little bit of money now, and a little bit of money every month for a while, and you can have this thing. And you go, I want this thing. Here you go. Here's my little bit of money now. I'll keep giving you a little bit of money. And then suddenly you realize, wait a second. I'm not just giving you a little bit of money now. I'm paying you 28% interest on this thing. And it's maybe not as good as I wanted. And even if it is, it doesn't matter. And then suddenly you're stuck. And money that you might have used for something else, a little more important, like food, or who knows what it might be, isn't there because you're stuck with paying with this thing and you've got no way out. But then somebody who knows a little bit more maybe talks to you about it. Maybe you bring it up, maybe you don't, maybe they just know something's wrong. They say, you know, you can get out of this. You can give it back. Or I'm in a position to lend you the money to pay them off and I won't charge you 28%, whatever it might be. Someone finds this person who is lost because of their own foolishness. And when it works out well, as it so frequently does with parents and people who care, there isn't this huge load of what was wrong with you, although sometimes we give in to that. But often, we see people saving us from foolishness just because they love us. And they're not saving us to teach us even a lesson. They're just saving us because we need to be saved. We can do foolish things. We can be lost. But even now, if we're in the middle of one of those, the shepherd, the good shepherd, God, is looking for us. Will find us, will come to us and bring us back. And we can be lost through no fault of our own, just like the coin. Maybe when we're younger, somebody that we trust or someone that is in a position of authority over us or whatever it might be tells us something that isn't really true about us, but we hear it in such a way that we think it is. Maybe as a teacher, who, when you did something you shouldn't, didn't say that was a stupid thing to do, said, you're stupid. Why did you do that? Because there's a world of difference between those two statements, isn't there? We all do stupid things. We're human. We make mistakes and all the rest of it. But when somebody says, you, my friend, have done a stupid thing, it means that what you've done is not right. When they say you're stupid and you've done a thing, suddenly it changes who you are entirely. Or maybe they point out a flaw in you that only they see as a flaw, and you think the best way to deal with this flaw is to stop eating, which is a very common outcome of ill-thought remarks from older people. And you end up with a problem that lasts your entire life as far as an eating disorder or whatever else it might be. These things happen, not because you chose. You never chose to be the recipient of this remark. It happened, and now you're lost. You believe a false thing about yourself. You can come back from those. You can be found, whether through the help of a counselor, a therapist, a person who loves you, whatever it might be, through the miraculous intervention of God, you can rise above these things that cause you not to eat properly. They cause you to think you're stupid because you're not stupid. No one has the quality of stupid. Every human being does things they wish they wouldn't have, and sometimes they're not very bright, but it doesn't mean that you're that way. And sometimes it's hard to learn that, but when you learn that, and as you learn that, you are being found and brought back. And then there's the son who got lost himself. And we tend to dismiss the first two. The first two ways of being lost might be the hardest for us to believe, because often we've been told the only way for us to be lost is we chose to be lost. We chose to be this other way. And it's not true all the time. I've had all kinds of people suggest that, you know, those who did hear something inappropriate and developed a poor way of coping with it through how they ate or how they behaved or whatever else, say, well, that's your fault. And no, it's not. But there are some things that are our fault. Sometimes we choose to be lost. Now, we don't choose to be lost, but we choose these things that have us ending up being lost. And at some level, we do know this. This is a little bit different than not reading the fine print. This is when you know the fine print's there and you aggressively don't read it. The son knew what it meant when he told his father he wished he was dead and wanted his money now. That was extremely unusual. Possible, of course, but extremely unusual. The son did not do that without knowing what was going on. And then the son found himself lost. The difficulty here is because you know you've lost yourself, you think, well, there is no way back. Of course I can't go back. I've burned that bridge. It's gone forever. But is it? Is it really? In some ways, the metaphor of burning your bridges is very helpful, because a burnt bridge is a really significant thing to deal with. But you can still build new bridges. It's not easy, sometimes harder even than the first bridge might have been, but you still can. And what this son begins to realize is that, okay, I'm lost, but rather than starving to death here, I'm going to go there and not be a son anymore. I'm going to go there and be a hired servant. It's better than starving. And goes back, and that's when we get that beautiful picture of the father who is looking for the son. Because he saw the son before the son saw him. And if that isn't a definition of looking, I don't know what is. Was he out there beating the bushes? I don't know. What we do know is that the father saw the son, and the son was still a ways away, and ran out to meet him in an atypical display of fatherly love. And when the son began this, what the father no doubt considered nonsense about how I'm not your son anymore, he just, yeah, shush. We're going to put a robe on you, we're going to give you some shoes, we're going to put a ring on you, and we're going to have a party with this fattened calf that we've been saving for a special occasion. And what could be more special of an occasion than this? Found. Not just found as a new hired hand, found as a son who was lost. We had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours, and we'll leave the older brother alone for now, this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and he is found. We lose things all the time, whether it's our keys for a moment or our peace of mind for years. It's easy for us to think that when we're lost through foolishness or someone else's behavior or our own choice, that we have to find our way back. The trouble is, we can't. We're not talking about getting lost in downtown Moose Jaw. We're talking about getting lost on the other side of the galaxy. We're getting lost in such a place that we don't even know where here is. We don't even know if here is a place. We're so lost. We can't get our way out of that. We have to have help. And sometimes the help comes from the people that we've known our entire lives, who loved us more than we ever knew, maybe more than they knew. Sometimes the help comes from God in a miraculous, a divine way. And at the back of all of it is that same miraculous and divine God, because God seeks and finds and saves what is lost of His. And you know what? We're all His. I look at these stories and sometimes, even now, I feel lost. I think all of us do now and then when we're faced with something that seems bigger than us and maybe we got ourselves into it or whatever else, and I feel lost. And I come back to Luke 15 and I go, okay, somebody's looking for me. And they are. Always. When I was younger and misinterpreted a chance remark about being roundish, as many small children are, is that there's something wrong with that. And ate poorly, if at all, for the next number of years. Somebody was looking for me, and they found me. And they changed how I thought about myself. It wasn't easy. It didn't take a single conversation the way the first one seemed to kick it off, but I was found. I don't know if you're feeling lost today or what it's about, whether it's big or not, or it's your fault or someone else's fault or nobody's fault at all. But I do know that you are not so lost that God can't find you. And He's looking for you right now. The metaphor breaks down at least a little bit because God always knows where we are. Sometimes the length of time it takes is for us to realize that that's God who's finding us, and that's okay. but we will be found. The shepherd, the woman, the father looked until they found the sheep, the coin, the son. If a shepherd, a woman, and a father can do that, are you trying to tell me God cannot? You will be found. God is looking for you right now if you're lost. If you look back over your life, you'll probably see places where God found you in the past. And then you look forward into the future and you think, well, I hope I'm never lost. Take comfort in the fact that if you are, God will find you then too. No matter what, no matter how, no matter anything, of all the things that our most loving God does, he finds those who are lost. Amen.